It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hi, Mark. Good day to you.
Good day to you. Hey, looking at probably the most common issue for either success or failure in relationships, and that is communication.
Yeah.
And you're going to kind of go about some different ways that we communicate well or don't, and some things to keep in mind.
You're right. It's probably, well, I have here, it's fundamental to relationship. communication, fundamental to all kinds of relationships, from business relationships, and quite often I see married couples. That's a good part of my practice. So communication governs the depth. That it's, if you think of a governor, if you've had a speedometer a lot of times in some, well, not a lot of times, but I've seen in cars where there's a governor. In fact, you can probably set a governor on most cars to where it gives you a buzz if you're going over a certain speed. So communication is kind of a governor of the depth of what a relationship should be. So deeper relationships are going to require richer communication. I've done the love triad paper and shows before. The three basic fundamentals or components of this good relationship: trust, forgiveness, and communion. In communication, in married couples, we want more than just exchanging data. Communication can just be exchanging data. But we want to do more than exchange data. We want actually, we're working toward communion. And so communication, of course, leads to communion. the more people are able to talk about, to talk and communicate, the more they find in common, ideally. The more they find in common, and the more they find in common, the deeper the relationship can go. So,
And this is more than just a how's the weather or
right.
How are you, I'm fine kind of communication. We got to have more than that.
Right. More than exchanging of data, it gets down, again, as we broaden the area of the commonality, what we have in common, as we broaden that area and we get deeper into our personal lives and share the personal, more personal aspects of our lives. And we have, what I'm calling communion. The tools of communication are pretty straightforward. And basically, communication is coding and decoding. If I'm the speaker, then I'm coding my message. And if I'm the listener, I'm decoding. So in a conversation, it goes back and forth. One codes, the other decodes. And the tools that I teach people for coding and decoding, first of all, and this, I guess, becomes really critical in the more essential the communication, the issue that we're talking about, the more important it is to use these tools properly. And I usually want people to start off with self-analysis. Now, of course, self-analysis is not as important if you're just exchanging data and or you're talking about the weather or asking, please pass the salt or something. But if you're talking about, if you're having a conversation over an issue that is kind of a trigger in a relationship, say, marriage relationship, this can happen quite often. Could be finances, could be a vacation, decision over, where to take a vacation, how to raise the kids, what school to send them to, what church to attend. Things like that require more the exchange of more personal information. Then I think self-analysis is the starting point for those. And self-analysis.
What do you mean by self-analysis?
Well, what I want to do is I want to ask myself: is it really important for me to share this? Do I really have to say this? What do I expect? What reaction do I expect? What is the objective of my communicatings? Take a rhetorical question, for example. and some, you know, the wife is doing something or the husband is doing something that is annoying to the other person. And so the person asks, what are you thinking? Or why on earth were you doing that? So this is a rhetorical question. And rhetorical questions, of course, can stir up some strife because they're actually statements, right? Mm-hmm. And so the rhetorical question is asked. But before the rhetorical question is asked, self-analysis would be, what am I expecting to get when I ask this question? Am I really expecting information, or am I just trying to get a jab in on the other person?
Do you think people really take that kind of time out?
No, but they should.
They should.
They should. I mean, if you if you're
so
having,
this is what you try and teach people.
Because if they're coming for coaching on communication, obviously they're doing some things wrong. So one of the ways to start correcting that is before you speak, take some time to ask yourself and be honest with yourself about why am I really saying this? Am I just being vindictive, or am I venting my irritation, or do I really need this information? That'll eliminate a lot of things that we say.
Could the self-analysis also be understanding maybe your communication style? Like some people are extrovert, introvert. Some people kind of hash out what they're thinking by just talking, and they don't necessarily mean everything they're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So, it could entail that. It could entail that. Taking thought, taking kind of a personal inventory and considering the ramifications of what I'm saying and how I'm saying it. So it starts with self-analysis. And so let's say the person does that kind of thought, that thinking, and but still determines, yeah, this is something that needs to be said or a question that needs to be asked. That self-analysis can take a second, and we're not talking about 15 minutes to analyze this, but just taking some time to think. The next thing would be, what are the best words to use to code my message? What is the best tone of voice to use? What's the best body language? What's the best facial expression? Those things, basically.
Yeah, tone seems to be a big part of it. Also, style, as far as like, you know, sarcasm is not going to work in this situation or with this person, you know, understanding this person doesn't handle sarcasm well, so I'm not going to use it, even though I loved to use sarcasm. Or, so you have to know who you're talking to.
Right, yeah. These are manipulative tools that I have. You know, it's interesting that these are blind spots for people, because we can go through these tools and people, yep, that makes sense. But then they go right on using sarcasm or using rhetorical questions or rolling their eyes or, you know, so yeah, when you're decoding what a person, somebody's speaking to, and you're rolling your eyes, then you're actually coding a message back to the person, you're using.
And you would think that this practice gets, or you get the most practice at this in a marriage, because that's a person who knows you better than anybody else. So you really get to hone your communication skills probably best in that relationship.
And, you know, you can get away with some things in more superficial or shallow relationships that you're not going to get away with in marriage. And so you have to learn that communication, the other person's communication style. So there are obstacles to communication, obviously. That's why the people are there in counseling. And as you brought out, Mark, different styles can be an obstacle to communication. So as far as different styles, one of the ways styles are differentiated is the way people gather information or input. And the way and output, the way that people deliver or process. So as far as input, these are the ways, again, we gather information. And this is a discussion about the five senses. Some people are more visual. Some people are more auditory. Some people are tactile. And so different people, it could be part of their personality, it could be part of their neurological wiring, where they're just more alert to things that they see, things that they hear, touch. It can change in life, obviously. If a person loses sight, they may have been a visual person, but now they might begin to be a more tactile person, a person, if a person loses hearing, they may become more visual. They may be more alerted to that sensory. But so the way we gather information is like part of the personality. So if people might be sharing and one person kind of has that perspective, they're more of a visual person, that can also affect the way that I should probably might want to communicate with them or talk to them. The other way that styles might be differentiated again is output, and that would be the ways in which people process. And you brought this out, verbal processors versus mental processors. So these differences, they always exist in relationships. No two people are the same. Think of it as the yin and yang, or the cogwheels fitting together. God puts us in relationships to bring about balance, and so that other person is going to have a communication style that's different than mine. And so the idea of marrying these processes together. So as far as input or sensory, again, people having to do with the way that we gather information, we can find it difficult to appreciate the way that things the way that other people do. So because we prioritize different senses, if that makes sense. If I'm a person that is more auditory in my learning, or and I might be talking to a person that's visual, and we might be talking about an opera that we went to, and I enjoyed it because of the sound, and they didn't enjoy it because the setting wasn't quite right or something like that. So it can affect our perceptions on things in our viewpoints.
And also another part of this is not only decoding, coding, but again, a person you have more of a relationship with, like a spouse, after a while, don't you kind of give each other, because you understand the other person so well, he's just talking this way because I know this about him, so that's why he's reacting this way. And they'll give you maybe, hopefully, more grace, or maybe call you on it more often. You know, you're reacting. I know this is little Mark from, you told me that story, and this is where, that's where that's coming from. So
that's part of what I refer to as, or have referred to as, just kind of marrying our styles together and taking the, you know, benefiting from the strengths of each different style. Say, for example, our output, the difference in processing. So a verbal processor, this is a person who verbalizes thoughts in order to filter them, whereas a mental processor filters thought before verbalizing it. So my wife is more of a mental processor. And so when she starts to speak, she wants to talk about point A to point B, whereas I'm more of a verbal processor, and I want to explore the various options verbally. And that can be, when you have that mix in a marriage, the person that's a verbal processor can come across as irritating or pedantic or pedestrian.
I would say I'm more verbal. But again, I can tune it because I know this doesn't work with this person, so I'm not going to be a verbal process. So you can kind of learn to put the brakes on with a certain person because you know how what does and doesn't work.
And that's exactly what you do. There are advantages and disadvantages to both, so let me just talk a little bit about that. The verbal advantages, the advantage to the verbal person might be, you know, they can often address questions before they become questions. They can express emotion, probably more. They're more nuanced in their communication, and they also have disadvantages. And maybe we should hold off on that until after the break.
Okay,
and get into the advantages and disadvantages, and talk about how we would kind of marry those together.
Okay, we are talking about communication as the foundation of all relationships, not just marital ones. If you need some help, though, maybe with your marriage or some kind of life coaching, Daniel would love to help you. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, I have a phone number, 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Also the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. By the way, the email address is Daniel Pryor, just my name, Daniel Pryor at BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel Pryor at BibleBasedCounselor.com. So people can contact me through email, offices, Edmonds and Kirkland. And I'm doing a lot of Zoom because of the cost of fuel and people from...
Does that work for you? Are you able to counsel as well on Zoom, or would you rather have people
in person? It's beginning to work. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when I first started it some time back, people, when they're in their own territory, they talk differently than when they're in an office. So sometimes, so you kind of have to adjust to the way people receive the information too. But I think people are getting more used to doing that, again, because of it, you know, the traffic in this area in particular, cost of fuel, cost of travel, scheduling. So I think people have learned that it's just convenient. And
Okay. We will be back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel is bringing us through some of the different ways that we communicate. Communication, the foundation of relationships. Talked about input, and we're on output now and ways, different ways people process output.
Yeah. So just to review just where we wound up just before the break, the advantages and disadvantages of the verbal processor and the mental processor. The verbal processor, of course, introduces into the conversation. They can address questions. I've been in like conversations where a verbal processor speaking is actually because of the breadth of their the way that they communicate is processing the different nuances of a thought. A lot of times they're answering questions that people have before the question is asked. So they're actually doing a good job of giving a full body of information. That's an advantage. A disadvantage is that often they give too much detailed information that's either too personal, information that is not needed, not wanted, too emotionally charged sometimes. And so that can cause the hearer to tune out, lose interest, be put off, and then ultimately avoid communication because it's just too much.
TMI is what it's called. Too much information. Well, this is also comes with kind of our therapeutic culture, too. People are so used to maybe talking about themselves so much and how they're feeling and their inner world, maybe. It just overwhelms some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The mental processor has advantages. They can be precise, efficient in terms of, you know, it doesn't take as much. They don't take up as much time. They don't take up as much emotional energy. And communication seems to be clear and precise, it can be less confusing. The disadvantage for the mental processor can be that they can seem detached, disinterested, unfeeling, unapproachable, unappreciative. And I see that a lot in married couples where you have a mental processor that just wants to get from point A to point B, and it almost can seem to the other person that they're ignoring the emotional side and they're, again, detached, and then they're disinterested in the effect that they're having.
And can this be both male and female? Can you have either role? Or does it tend to be the woman is the more verbal processor?
I've seen it go both ways. Yeah, and so as, for example, in with my wife and I would be the verbal processor, and she's point A to point B. She's kind of the administrative person. I'm sure you know families where the guy's the engineer and the gal's the florist, it would be just a flip-flop. You know, she's the artist.
Well, but I was thinking, though, too, again, the difference between male and female. Women do seem to be able to tap into their emotion much more easily than men. Mm-hmm. Is that true? But that doesn't affect the way they communicate.
It's true as a general rule, but it's more of a continuum than it is. It's not so categorical. It's more nuanced than that.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with family of origin, birth order. So, you know, if a gal turns out to be dad's favorite child because she's following in his footsteps and, you know, she can be pretty, have those same male tendencies in communication and reasoning. And so it's kind of a continuum. Yeah. So the idea, so we go through these advantages and disadvantages. And as you brought out in the previous part, Mark, the importance of learning how that other person communicates. I say to the husband, you don't have to understand women. You just have to understand that one woman.
Right.
And the wife doesn't have to understand men, just that one man that she's married to. But yeah, we have to learn the style of the person that we're married to. And then we have to marry those styles together. We have to find ways to benefit from the advantages of each particular style. So one, you touched on this too, Mark, that one of the, I think the verbal processor is learning restraint, or you could say temperance in terms of the fruits of the Spirit. So as a verbal processor, I've had to kind of look at the cues, the facial expressions of, say, my wife and say, when her eyes are glassing over, that doesn't mean she wants more information. It means she wants less information.
Right.
And so I have to, even though it's against my nature, I've got to rein it in and learn that the world isn't going to stop moving if I don't say every thought that comes into my head.
Right. Right.
And so the important thing is getting my message across to that person, coding it so that it can be decoded, not necessarily saying every thought that I have in my head. Mm. They may not be able to absorb that information, even though I think it's very important. It might turn out to be a distraction, and it might actually be a barrier to communication instead of a help. So I'm learning temperance to rein it in. On the other hand, she's learning to broaden her bandwidth and realize that I have to learn that I can hear more. I can listen to more. I'm learning patience. So she's learning patience. I'm learning temperance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that with all marriages, not exactly the same, but there are variations on that theme. But basically, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
One is learning one side of the balance while the other is
learning. Some of these things you would only learn in a marriage, or that's at least one of the best places to try this out and to improve. Because, again, it's a significant relationship like no other.
That's right. So vulnerability is essential to communication, to communion, and trust is essential to vulnerability. So again, you're back to the triad of trust, forgiveness, and communion. But it's this interesting where trust and vulnerability, I was talking to a friend about this just last night. Trust and vulnerability kind of cross-pollinate. You know, if you ask the question, what comes first, trust or vulnerability? It's kind of like the chicken and the egg.
Mm.
If I give my investor $10 and say, yeah, put this on a good stock, and somebody says, well, you really must trust your investor. Yeah, but not as much as if I invested $10,000.
Right.
So there's an element of vulnerability that is kind of a governor on trust. But there needs to be trust in order to be vulnerable. So there's sort of cross-pollinated. It's kind of chicken and egg. They sort of walk hand in hand.
Mm.
But you could, for the sake of the conversation, you could say that trust leads to vulnerability. Vulnerability leads to communication. So the husband and wife might have different concepts of vulnerability. And this would be a male versus female or our cultural roles where if I say to a wife, you must be vulnerable, that is going to send to her a different message than if I say that you must be vulnerable to the husband, because the husband traditionally seems to have some latitude there where he can, you know, his vulnerability is almost entirely by choice. But the wife could argue, well, hey, I feel like I have no choice but to be vulnerable. So that's a bit nuanced too. And I think that husbands need to understand that, and wives need to understand that vulnerability doesn't kind of taste the same coming from those.
Mm.
One way to encourage trust is, and I think I'll say this quickly, is envision your communication as a walking through a minefield, and there are many mines, and so some marriages have these marriages where you really can't talk about anything without an explosion. So what you want to do is realize that there are paths between the mines, and what these paths are the opportunities that come up every day to encourage, to affirm, to show care, to appreciate, and if you take advantage of those opportunities, you will broaden the paths between the mines, you will build trust, and at some point, you're going to be able to talk about some of those mines without them going off. Mm. But you have to, first of all, start taking the opportunities to show compassion, to show love, support, affirmation, encouragement, appreciation.
Okay, well, people are intrigued. They like some of your thoughts on the subject of communication in marriage or any other relationship. How do they get in touch with you for more help?
The phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. The website is BibleBasedCounselor.com. The email address is my name, Daniel Pryor, at BibleBasedCounselor.com, BibleBasedCounselor.com. So my name, Daniel Pryor, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Office is in Edmonds and Kirkland, and I'm doing a lot of Zoom that people are beginning to find. They're working from home a lot anyway, so they can just take a break, and I can send them a Zoom link, and away we go.
Okay. Always great stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.